right. Well, here we are. To dream again. To dare again. To feel enjoyment and happiness again. Or for the first time. To realize this is living. Be inspired. To see your life as an exciting journey of discovery. With your host of the Inspire Possibility Show, Mark Sussman.
Hi, everybody. It's Mark Sussnell, and you are listening to the Inspire Possibility Show, the show that hopefully will make a difference in your life and inspire you to think in ways that perhaps you've been afraid to consider. And I've invited today Susan Schicke. She's the author of Ma, Rishi, and Me. And actually, she's written 14 other books. She considers herself and by others a transcendental meditation insider. And I've been involved in that path for over 40 years myself. So I was very intrigued about having Susan on my show and to kind of find out about all the inside secrets and all that kind of stuff that has been speculated about. And I know when I got into meditation, it was kind of a new thing, where today everybody knows about meditation. I don't think you could find anybody around that hasn't heard about meditation. And Maharishi pretty much took it and made it a household word. And Susan definitely has an intimate knowledge of the workings of the transcendental meditation movement, and I feel honored and intrigued at the same time by having Susan on my show. So, Susan, hi, how are you?
Hi, Mark. I'm doing great today.
Good, and it's interesting because I told you off air that I'm reading your book. I enjoy it, and especially for somebody that's really looking for deeper meaning, and you've been involved in the movement for 22 years, living in ashrams, and you know, for 6 years you were on the personal staff of Maharishi, and so my question is why?
Well, it was a 1960s. The 1960s, I was a hippie. I was living in the San Francisco Bay Area at the time. I was a flower child. And those of us who were flower children, you may or may not know this, but we were really very serious about
it. I know. Give me credit.
About experiencing a spiritual awakening, higher consciousness, altered states of consciousness. And our gurus at that time were Timothy Leary and Richard Alpert, who had written the book, The Psychedelic Experience. And they were telling us to turn on, tune in, and drop out. And so I was reading the Buddhist scriptures. I was reading Tibetan Book of the Dead, Dhammapada, Autobiography of a Yogi by Paramahansa Yogananda. I was reading The Way of Zen by Alan Watts and other books by Alan Watts. And in Alan Watts' books, it said that you have to find a meditation guide. Well, good luck in 1966 trying to find meditation guide anywhere in the Yellow Pages or any other place at that time. So I asked a roommate, how do I find this meditation guide? He said, well, have you ever tried to meditate on your own? And I said, well, I'll give it a shot. So I lay down on my bed, clearly completely clueless. I didn't know that you're supposed to even sit up when you meditate. I lay on my bed and kind of asked for or prayed for a meditation. And immediately I was propelled into an ecstatic state. I could feel this cord or rush of energy flowing from the tips of my toes all the way to the top of my head. I felt like I was plugged into an electric socket of the universe, but in a most ecstatic way. And I figured, well, I guess this is meditation. Little did I know that I'd had my first meditation experience and also Kundalini awakening at the same time. And it wasn't long after that that someone brought me to the Transcendental Meditation Center in Berkeley, which didn't have a teacher. I had to wait 9 months before I could learn. But as soon as I walked into that center, I saw a photo of Maharishi, and immediately I fell into a kind of spiritual love with him. And I knew this was where I needed to go, needed to learn TM. That was in 1966. But I did not learn meditation until the summer of love, August of 1967. That's when the teacher finally came around and got to Berkeley to teach me Transcendental Meditation. And, you know, there was a class that I could take.
Right. Well, you know, one thing people say is, and I even had those thoughts when I guess I got in meditation in 71, but I remember I was taking guitar lessons, and my teacher kept talking to me about meditation. And at that time, I was kind of a celebrity, as in Rolling Stone a lot, and doing defending draft resistors when I was a lawyer, and, you know, a dope lawyer. And I'm going, why do I want to repeat some word, you know, over and over again? And what is your thinking about that? I mean, that's an ascension, that meditation of repeating a mantra that that we're not even aware of what the true meaning is. So what is your what are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, well, when Maharishi first arrived on the shores of America in 1959, there was no meditation, there was no mantra, there was no yoga. These concepts were completely not in our culture whatsoever. But they've been in the culture of India for millennia. So the idea of mantra is a sound, it's a vibration. It also is connected with a deity. And it's been used in India for, you know, so long. And so the Transcendental Meditation uses mantras. And it uses mantras in a different way than how it's been used in India for all that time, actually, because in India they chanted the mantras. They still do. Chant mantras, speak mantras, and so on. But with Transcendental Meditation, you use a mantra internally, silently, to yourself, and it takes you into a blissful state. It takes you away from the outer world, into the inner world, and beyond thought, into this what's called transcendental consciousness. In India, they call that samadhi, or which means stillness of mind, and evenness of mind and stillness and quietude of body as well. And that's also known as Sat Chit Ananda, or absolute bliss consciousness. So the mantra is like a vehicle that takes you deep within. And, you know, it's the advantage of it is that pretty much anybody can do it and learn it. So it's a very simple technique that really anyone can do and get results.
But
it actually works.
Yeah. Why not just focusing on your breath? Because a lot of Zen practices, that's what they do. That's what you just focus on your breathing. Why not that?
Yeah, I've never really found focusing on breath to be a very successful form of meditation, because
the
mind wanders so easily for
me,
because the mind is always wandering somewhere else. And so if focusing on your breath, you don't remain focusing on your breath. And focusing on the breath, to me, doesn't take me into a deep meditative state.
Right. So you know, another question I have is, you know, the first question was why, right? And then the next question is another why question. Why write this book at this time?
You know, I started writing this book in 1998. And
okay.
I wrote it because, the reason I wrote it is because an editor in New York at McGraw-Hill asked me to write it. And then, not too long after that, she was laid off. But meanwhile, I had written the book. And so my agent tried to sell it several times and could never sell it. One of the editors said, "I don't think she can pull this off." That's quote-unquote. And many other editors said, Maharishi, who's he? We don't know who he is, and we don't care.
Right.
He's passé. These were some of the comments we got that, you know, my agent got. It wasn't until a couple years ago when I actually had a kind of a revelation about the theme of the book. And once I changed the theme, I was able to sell it right. My agent was able to sell it. So that worked.
And what was the change that you made?
Yeah. Initially, I was going to write it as an expose and kind of negative. But then I realized that that really wasn't my true feelings about the whole thing. Once I sorted out my real feelings about Maharishi and the organization and everything, I realized, oh, my gosh, here's an opportunity for me to give people an inside view, a glimpse of what it's really like to be in an ashram and how gurus work with their disciples in a kind of what I call open ego surgery, which is very unusual and which people just don't know about. There's been so few books written on the subject that I can count. There's like two of them that I can think of.
Right.
Three, actually.
But, I mean, you're just, I mean, there are lots of gurus, and you're just really given the perspective, your perspective of one guru. So, I mean, I'm just wondering if that's kind of a stretch to say that this is how gurus work. This is how one guru works, and I'm just, I don't know
it's
if
how it's traditional, actually, it's traditional in India for gurus to work in a similar way. And it's borne out in, if you know about gurus, if you talk to people from India, if you read some of the books about it that have been written on this topic, very few, but yes, it is the way gurus work in the Far East, not just in India.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, the one thing I think I was curious about in the information your publicist sent me, she described it in her writings as an expose, and you in your first pass at it that wasn't published, you were talking about it as an expose. And I'm wondering, and now it's out, and they're still using that word expose. So tell me more about what led to that thought process that you had prior to coming out as Maharishi and Me, and also even now your publicist using that description.
Exactly. Well, it is still an expose in the sense that I disclose all kinds of secrets about what it's like to be in an ashram and how this particular guru worked with his disciples and various celebrities, and there's a lot of secrets that are revealed in the book. So, yeah, it's still an expose. But before, when I originally was writing the book, it was going to be more of a negative slant on the whole thing. And so that kind of expose is a different entirely kind of expose.
Right. I mean, it would be something to put out an expose, which was your life for 20 years. It almost invalidates your whole experience to kind of think of it in that context.
Yeah, I suppose you're right.
Yeah. So it's good that you kind of had another look at it. You know, they always say the universe works perfectly, and so it was probably a good thing that your agent said to you, hey, I can't do anything with this book.
Right.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah. And the other thing I noted from reading it is that he definitely gives the celebrities special attention. The Beatles, that was really what I think brought, in my generation anyway, and I think we're in the same generation, what really put it on the map was the Beatles, when they, it was part of their mystique of connecting with Maharishi. And this was prior to my getting involved in TM, and Mia Farrow, and then Dear Prudence, that song about her sister. And you definitely are clear about that he gave preferential treatment to the celebrities. And
for
and you even described
he always
it.
Did.
Yeah, he was kind of enamored with Mia Farrow.
Yes, I believe he may have been enamored with her. Yes, that's true.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's a fascinating book. So to you people out there that are listening to this show, I highly encourage you to, especially if you're curious about a spiritual path, to and some of the stories. Again, it's a lot of the Beatles and Mike Love of the Beach Boys and Donovan were all at this teacher training in Rishikesh, India. And it's a fun book. It's a fun read. And what people can get it on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and that kind of stuff?
Yeah, anywhere, actually. You can get the book anywhere. It's available in the bookstores and at every possible online site. Definitely.
Right.
That sells books, including Walmart and Target.com. You know, everywhere, really, at this time.
So where are you at now in terms of your life? I mean, are you still involved? You also refer to the organization as dysfunctional, and so I'm just curious: is that part of the reason? I assume you're no longer involved in the organization.
No, I'm not involved with Transcendental Meditation. I don't practice it, and I'm not involved with the organization.
And what led you to describe the organization as dysfunctional?
Actually, strangely, the publisher described it that way, but that's okay. I don't mind. The organization was very, very strict beyond belief. In the 1980s, I got disillusioned with the organization because of the kind of hard-fisted way that it dealt with the practitioners of Transcendental Meditation, and so strict about what people could do in their personal lives and so on. For example, the Maharishi International University in Fairfield, Iowa, I lived there off and on for about 10 years. When I wasn't living there, I was living in some other Transcendental Meditation facilities during that period of time between 1979 and 1989. And Maharishi International University was there in Fairfield, Iowa. And in the library, they banned any spiritual book that was not a TM publication. For example, they banned Autobiography of a Yogi and books about Ramakrishna, books. Any spiritual books about any great masters were banned from the library, and also any New Age books were banned from the library. So, you know, people would only be allowed to read books, or students would only be allowed to read books that were TM publications. So
wow.
That kind of repressiveness, that really did not hit me in the best
light. Yeah, I don't blame you.
I wasn't too thrilled about the organization during that period
right.
of time. That was just one example. There are many things that made me very disillusioned with the organization at that time.
And when did you leave the organization?
In 1989. But I have to say that the meditation technique, TM, I still recommend it. I think it's an excellent meditation technique. And like I said, anyone can do it. It actually works. It's very effective. So I would say anybody, if they want to learn meditation, this is a good way to learn.
Right, and Maharishi would always say that it was simple. It's a simple technique, and I think it is.
Yes.
I mean, because I have experimented with other types of meditation, and actually today I still do this morning I start my day with my TM mantra, a variation of it.
That's great, yeah.
And I find it's like the bottom line for me, regardless of what I did the night before, because I used to kind of use what I did the night before as an excuse not to do it. Oh, I feel lazy today. I'm asleep late. But you're saying that you don't practice Transcendental Meditation today?
No, I practice another form of meditation that I teach, actually. It's called Divine Revelation.
Uh-huh. And what led I'm always curious too, because I know I've been involved in, you know, again, the TM meditation, and I've experimented with other forms of meditation, and at times think about, you know, I use like a morning program that I've made mine, and you know, I spend about an hour with meditation and gratitude and yoga, and kind of my time to start the day. And but it's this idea of, again, TM was so rigid, and a lot of the people that were teachers and on that path had that certain, and when I got involved in it, all of them looked the same. I mean, they all were clean. First of all, I mean, this was, you're talking about the hippie era or whatever, and the people in TM were all clean cut. And
yeah, Maharishi was famous for making hippies into straight laced people.
Yeah,
straight laced, upright, you know, citizens. So that was, and, you know, it was something good about that in a way.
Uh huh. So, so this idea of how do you know when? I mean, it takes courage, I think, to kind of branch out, and you know, you've obviously have been on this path for many, many years, and you actually taught probably what, thousands to meditate with TM?
No, I didn't teach thousands. I taught hundreds of people meditation through TM.
Uh-huh. Right.
When I was a TM teacher, I haven't done that, like I said, since 1989.
Right. But to go ahead and to say, okay, I'm ready to move on, and what was that like for you to kind of go from the TM to this, what you're teaching now about what you call divine revelation?
Mm-hmm. Well, like I said, I always only had really positive and wonderful experiences with transcendental meditation. It was a lifesaver for me. I had wonderful experiences, exactly what they, you know, what's in the brochure, exactly what they advertise.
Right.
I had all of it. I experienced all of it. And also even with their advanced techniques of the TM City program, what they call that, I had fantastic experiences with that too, which I describe in the book, Maharishi and Me,
uh-huh.
that I wrote, my memoir. But there was something that I wanted that was not, that it wasn't really being experienced in transcendental meditation, and that was the experience of divine love. And that experience of divine love I found through this other method called divine revelation. And I love it, and I teach it, and I find that it's, for me, something that's really a wonderful, wonderful way for me to experience who I really am, to experience my higher self, and to the divine, communicate with divine beings and deities and so on. And so for me, it's very practical, very powerful, and I really love it. So I teach it.
And do you teach that in person, or is it virtual? Or
I teach it in person. I travel around and give workshops, and also I teach it over the phone or via Skype as well.
Right.
But mainly I teach it through my books. People can learn it in my books. You don't have to have a personal teacher to learn what I teach. You just read the books and use the methods that are in the books, and perhaps use the guided meditations that you get by reading the books, you know, that has a link to the
URL.
And
what book is this?
Okay, the main books that teach this particular technique are Divine Revelation is one of the books, and the other one is Awaken Your Divine Intuition.
Uh-huh.
And also, third would be Awaken Your Third Eye. That's another book I wrote that teaches
uh-huh.
this method. But the main ones are Divine Revelation and Awaken Your Divine Intuition.
So how do people, if people want to find out more about you and what you do and your workshops, how do they get a hold of you?
At drsusan.org, drsusan.org. Yeah.
That's easy.
Yeah.
That's very easy.
Yeah. Or also divinetravels.com. That's plural on the travels. Divinetravels, com, and there you can read, you can find out about my tours to sacred destinations and the cruise ship conferences that I produce.
Wow, you're busy. I like to,
busy,
I always,
is a really an understatement, I have to tell you. Busy is a vast understatement.
Engaged, fully engaged.
Fully engaged in
fully
dynamic
engaged
activity.
Mm-hmm, okay, I like that, dynamic activity.
Yeah,
I'm a dynamically active being, mm-hmm. Susan Chomsky.
Yeah.
So what inspires you right now?
What inspires me is the experience of the divine presence that always inspires me, is going within and experiencing that divine love within me and knowing that the divine presence is with me now and always, and is such a joy, such a joyful experience. It's actually the most fun that anybody can have with their clothes on.
Whoa. I like that distinction.
Well, yeah.
You clarified that. Yeah. And what about for the planet right now as a whole? What gives you hope?
Well, you know, I am 70 years old, so I remember when this planet was really, really different. The vibration of this planet when I was a youngster and the vibration of the planet now, you can't even, there's no comparison. You don't even recognize the planet anymore the way it used to be. There was so much tension in the atmosphere. It was a cold war. People were scared out of their wits that an atomic bomb was going to fall on their heads any moment. And the 20th century was a bloodbath. Tens of millions of people were killed in these wars. People don't realize what it was like back then. There was so much unbelievable violence. And today people complain about a few thousand people getting killed here and there, or some terrorist bomb or something. But what it used to be like, oh, my God.
I know. I totally,
this world,
Susan,
has changed dramatically.
I totally agree with you, exact word for word.
I mean,
I'm in that same generation. And
right.
I mean, my God, I everything you said is right on. And I think that there's... Yeah, I mean, we're in so much of a, I mean, yeah, we're not, it's not perfect, I mean, in one sense,
no.
Perfect in another sense, in the few, you know, how mm-hmm. how you see perfection, but I mean, I think that it's totally different, and yet people focus on, you know, oh, Trump this, Trump that, and I always kind of classify people in terms of, in my new book, Soul of Uncertainty, a young man meets a mentor, and the mentor was saying that, you know, in the world, they're drainers and they're gainers, you know, and the drainer mm-hmm. just suck your energy. And the gainers are the kind of people that when you're with them, you feel empowered. And it sounds like you're one of those people that is a gainer, that you empower people to be their best and to touch into that inner spirit and become spiritual beings. So thank you for being my guest on the Inspire Possibility Show. I'm glad that we're able to have this conversation today. And I think mm-hmm. I think it was great. And I look forward to finishing your book.
Well, thank you for inviting me. It was a pleasure to be here on your show. And, yeah, I completely agree with you. And, that is my mission, is to empower people to be their best self, to really realize their true self.
So thanks again, Susan Chomsky, for being our guest on the Inspire Possibility Show. And next week, we're going to have another amazing person share their journey with us and their wisdom and their insights. And in the meantime, until next week, journey on.
You've been listening to Inspire Possibility Show with Mark Susnow. To learn more about Mark Susnow, go to inspirepossibility.com. And click on the contact button. Schedule a complimentary visit with Mark or email him at mark@inspirepossibility.com. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine.